Oh, we're ready. All right, here we go.
Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We use science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction.
What's it doing?
Oh, are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you.
You don't have what?
And you too.
No. Hi. Hi, Mark. Oh, hi, Mark.
How's it going?
Good.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, I have never seen you in a panic. Except for just now.
Well, I was doing my thing and not doing the thing that
you
have,
usually do.
But I had another thing that I had prepared, and I don't have that.
And you don't have that. Yes. Well, speaking of the thing that you don't have, I was going through. I told you guys this last week. I think. The only thing people have commented on for putting together something for the 100th episode is, oh, can you do a thing where it's just Mark jokes? And so I have been going through the past 94 episodes and excerpting the best, not just about all of them.
Did you have any play together. Have any eye jokes in there by any chance?
Like ocular eye?
Yeah.
I don't. Remember, I don't think so.
Yeah, they're probably too cornea for that list. Maybe a little cornea.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well, Todd.
And special in studio today, we have Brian Kidd, the Unipiper, in with us. How are you, Brian?
Hey, Todd. Doing well over here on the north end of the table.
On the north end of the table. Yes, we are all gathered here today because we wanted to talk a week late about the events of last week with the eclipse. And since we all traveled and experienced that together, I thought it would be fun just for our sakes to have a wrap up of it, because it was a pretty fantastic and amazing trip. So we will get into that. But first, let's do some news. So Chuck Palahniuk, which is a name that I still can't spell, and I had to look up when I did this article for the fourth time this week. Any guesses on how to spell Palahniuk?
No.
Brian.
I'm looking at it in front of me, but I do think you asked on the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did not get it right.
Yeah, and every time. So for the record, it's Palahniuk, Chuck Palahniuk. Who is, of course, a writer from here in Portland. And he hid a time capsule in the house that he used to live in, and the current owners found it. So in 2007, Chuck Palahniuk sold his home in Portland, and the new owner found a package that had a letter he wrote about the house, a signed copy of Fight Club, family photos, and his original renovation drawings for the bathroom that they redid. So that would be really cool. I always wanted in houses, like, I wish there was some sort of rule where you had to like take pictures. Yeah.
A journal.
And, yeah. Yeah. And so like, you knew, cause I've lived in some very old houses and I would just love to know like what's been done to them. You guys live in a fairly older house too. One of those cool old ones.
I was really excited one time. Just randomly, I discovered that the top of the banister rail came off and it's a square shape and it just popped off and it was hollowed down. And I looked inside and there was a cardboard tube. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be something amazing. And I pulled out the tube and it was nice and long and it was empty.
I forget what I put in it. There was a cinder block column that was part of the gate, the wrought iron gates that went around our pool growing up. And you could open the top like that and hide stuff inside. But I don't think I ever did for some reason. But
never took the opportunity.
I never took the opportunity. I knew I would never find it again.
Speaking of hiding stuff, did you know that on the corners of Powell's downtown where it looks like a kind of sculpted books.
Book pillar. Yeah. Books. Yeah.
One of those is hollow and they put ashes in there.
Ashes?
Yeah.
Of who?
Like people?
Or like Mount St. Helens?
No, the ashes of Fahrenheit 451. No.
Boy, that's
Funny enough, I think I might have remember reading that in Chuck Palahniuk's Portland book.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice. Anyway, so that was a little neat story. So in other Northwest state, the apple growers in Washington state expect their third largest harvest ever. And that's even if they're not going to beat last year. So last year was a huge one, too. So they get more apples per acre, and their acreage has gone down in term, even though it's gone down in terms of orchard land. But the per apple that they can get, per acres worth of apples that they can get out of those is much bigger now. So they export $2 billion worth of apples from Washington state, and 97% of it is shipped to other states and countries.
Gee, thanks, so, science.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. And it's weird. I was just there. My family lives in the Yakima Valley, and so there's all the orchards and stuff there. And it's really interesting to see the different ways they grow the different crops, because there's the grapes and there's the hops that they have to run up. And now they used to have cherry trees, just your standard tree. But now they're all on straight lines. So there's like a post and then like three wire runners that go up and down it, and they're just grown spread completely straight out. Wow. So that you can get to the fruit much better.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And all that stuff like grafting, which is where you can just take a branch from one tree and put it in another one, and that's it, and then it'll grow that new branch, is like all of that agricultural science stuff is just amazing and really neat to see how it transforms each year to accommodate for less land and different crop structures.
Gosh, our medical system has a lot to catch up on in grafting. Only we would
just
learn.
Hollow out a piece and just shove the new arm in. Another story, the U.S. Embassy employed the employees in Cuba at the U.S. Embassy possibly were subjected to what's called an acoustic attack that left two people with serious health issues that they needed to be brought back to the U.S. The sophisticated device that operated outside the range of audible sound was deployed either inside or outside the residences of the U.S. diplomats living in Havana.
Wow.
One official said the employees could have suffered permanent hearing loss. The employees affected were not in the same place at the same time, but suffered a variety of physical symptoms since late 2016. They said it's possible that the people behind the attack did not realize the extent of the damage, and one U.S. diplomat now will need hearing aids for the rest of their life. So they're not quite sure what happened or who did it, but some sort of...
So do you think it's been going on since for months, and they've just been subject to it, and it's affected them over time?
It could be.
That is
just
scary.
The exposure to it, because if you can't hear it, then, or it was just some sort of blast noise or something like that, like the brown note.
It's just somebody's refrigerator that's right.
Someone doesn't have the cable to their HDMI hooked up right. It's humming.
Oh, too soon.
Too soon. Okay. Elon Musk in the news again now. Elon Musk is sort of turning into like the Walmart of American science, where now people just give him taxpayer money to do the stuff that he wants. Yeah. So he's getting $27 million to build brand new brain computers through something called the Neuralink. So Neuralink is a startup co-founded by billionaire Elon Musk, and he is taking steps to sell as much as $100 million in stock to fund the development of technology that connects human brains with computers. So they've gotten $27 million in funding from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. He also had a breakdown of how he spends his time, Elon Musk. So he spends 2% of his time on the Boring Company, which is the one that's just digging holes
building
tunnels. Yep. Neuralink, which is this new one, 3-5%. OpenAI, which must be his artificial intelligence, which he keeps warning us. I didn't read the story this week, but he keeps warning that is a bigger threat than like nuclear holocaust is AI. So good thing he's got his fingers in it then. The 90 plus of his time is divided between SpaceX and Tesla.
I'm just waiting for Elon Musk to show up on as a guest on the next season of Black Mirror, because that would be very funny.
And he takes his real face off to expose that he is an alien. And finally, pigs rescued from a fire later served as sausage to the firefighters who rescued them. A British farmer thanked firefighters who rescued a litter of piglets and two sows from a barn fire in February by giving them sausages made out of the animals. Farmer Rachel Rivers thanked the Pewsley Fire Department with sausages from the pigs they rescued 6 months ago. Rivers told the BBC she promised the firefighters she would bring them some sausage from the pigs, which were reared for meat. Quote, I gave those animals the best quality of life I could ever give until the day they go to slaughter and they go into the food chain, she said. The fire station shared photos of the sausages, which has since been deleted. And they thanked Rivers for the meat. So that was a heartwarming story.
In other news, police received sausages from the paramedics who rescued the man from the nursing home.
Anyway, that's all the news I had for this week.
Cool.
And that abruptly stopped the teletype noise. So who wants to take us down? Brian, I'll hand it over to
Memory
you.
Memory lane.
Yeah, I don't know if you had any Portland-specific things today, but I'll just hand it over to you to kind of walk us through what we did last weekend as far as our trip.
Last week was, let's see, today's Sunday, so it's been... we were getting ready to see the eclipse 1 week ago. We left town on Friday. That's the thing about this eclipse is there was just so much, I feel like, misinformation out there. Nobody truly knew what to expect with this eclipse.
Right.
In terms of like viewing it or, being ready for it. And, you know, there were people saying it was going to be the end of the world and people were going to run out of food and towns were going to shut down.
Yeah.
We decided to
plunge on into that.
Yeah. Because the fact that your residence was in the path of totality
wasn't enough. And actually, it was on the very edge. So from my house, it would have been like 99.9. But as we'll discover later in the story, that is a gigantic
Big difference. Yeah.
Night and day almost. Really.
We started planning. So we started planning, I think, back in March.
Yeah.
Which at the time, that was before people were really talking about the eclipse very much. Now, certainly there's a contingent of folks who've been prepping for this for years.
Yeah.
But before the common man and the common citizen around Portland was really interested. And even at that time, we didn't intend to go as far out as we did to Idaho. We thought that we would just go somewhere in Central Oregon and find a place. And
because originally when this is like, I feel like back in February almost.
Yeah.
When you guys brought it up, you want to go camping and go see the eclipse. And I was like, sure, you know, but I can't. That was when I was out of work. So I'm like, I can't afford to go, you know, to pay toward it, but just point me in the direction or whatever. So I would just left all the planning to you guys. The Simpsons are going to Idaho. And I'm like, oh, that's different.
And so from Portland back in February, the closest place that we could find with availability ended up being north of Boise.
Yeah.
And so that's where we went. And we drove along 84, which is the direction that we thought most of the folks were going to be taking out there. And immediately, as soon as we hit the interstate, there was like
no one there.
Traffic.
And this was this was Friday morning, Friday before the eclipse.
Right. And I know that the airport, PDX, was experiencing extremely high volumes, influx of people. So they were all going somewhere, but I feel like it was almost less traffic than usual on the 84 getting out of town, which is just really weird. So we got out there just fine. Getting there was fine, but then getting to our cabin was a bit of a bit of a story there. The cabin was north of Boise in the Clear Creek area, mountains, and eventually our road turned to gravel and then eventually dirt.
Less gravel and less dirt and more holes and more less and less passed over.
And by this time it was getting really dark.
It was very dark.
9 o'clock at night. Yeah. The sun
in the mountains. So there's no like street lights or no.
Right. And it's one of those addresses that doesn't exactly show up in the GPS. And, and so the guy that we rented the cabin from, No Bull Rentals, he'd given these like really cryptic directions for getting to the cabin.
Which included go to the the last fork in the road.
That was my favorite.
And you're like, but How do I know this is the last one?
Go to the last fork in the road and take the path that leads to a higher elevation.
That's exactly what it said. Take the high road. And so...
And these roads, mind you, are like at this point, so you go like on a state... On a state like two-lane highway up, you know, into the mountains, and then it branches off into like community dirt road that's fairly, you know, packed down, and then
one road would lead to a trailer park, and the other would lead to like a multi-million-dollar subdivision,
right?
What
behind gates? But I mean, all of it is like almost a one-lane road that's just gravel and nonsense, and here we are in our minivan,
and then we somehow managed to make it to the very last turn. So we're turning onto the road that our cabin is on. And what is in the road but a bulldozer completely blocking the road. Even if the bulldozer wasn't there, we wouldn't be able to drive on the road because it's full of boulders.
Oh, boulders. And I would describe, and it wasn't a full-size backhoe. It was like a litter. It was bigger than a bobcat, but it was like a smaller size backhoe-looking thing that had like a claw instead of a scoop. It had the thumb part of the scoop.
Right.
And when what was doing what I could only... be described as furiously clearing the road. I mean, whipping that thing around and clamping it, throwing it, and he was clearly in a hurry, and it was like if anger was a machine.
He was not being paid hourly.
No.
That's very true.
That was a fixed fee.
Very efficient.
Yeah. So, you know, by the time we showed up, I think it would have taken him maybe another 45 seconds to finish clearing that road.
Right.
But Mark had
thankfully we had GPS.
And we had Mark there who had a better suggestion. Mark had his own GPS. And what did you think, Mark?
That there was Google Maps showed a clear path.
A loop.
A loop that basically we were going on one leg of the loop. And there was another leg of the loop just past us.
Right.
And so all we had to do is take the next turn.
Yeah.
And we will come in to the property from the backside.
Yeah.
Well, that turns out that next road is another person's driveway, which is mostly washed out.
It immediately got 50% narrower.
From
it was already
one lane road.
And it comes close to the backside of the property, which turns out to be on a steep incline. And so, like, if our vehicle had rolled off of the road,
we would have landed in the backyard.
We would have landed very nicely in the backyard of the property. But it was the end of a very long day. We had a lot of...
We had been in a car like 12 hours.
A lot of people needed
like
to pee.
A lot of people may have been pregnant.
I'm surprised I got invited back.
And we were scraping axle on that road. We
several
were like
times.
Bottoming
it was a little
out.
High centering, yeah.
they did not lift the skirt of the car, so to speak, when I returned it.
Oh,
thankfully.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, thankfully it was a rental car that you had foreseen the need to get insurance.
Yeah, so it was just the perfect horror movie setup because, you know, we show up in the dark, these roads are sketchy, suddenly our road is closed, and then everywhere...
No cell service.
Absolutely no cell service. And then that other person's driveway that we ended up, they were having like a permanent yard sale and just all these weird things, and then the light turns on and it's like, it's a dead end, so we have to like go back down this treacherous road. It's like, well, here's the end. And this was... All the way up there was just littered with really sketchy looking signs that kept saying yard sale. And each sign looked like it was the person was diving deeper into madness with each sign in the series of yard sale signs.
Yeah, because the letters were legitimately like on the third one in, like off kiltered and like lowered
by
and
45
like,
degrees. And
something you'd see from a movie prop
dripping.
Studio. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I heard dueling banjos playing. Not sure.
But I guess, long story short, we did make it to the cabin. Yeah. We returned, and the boulders were gone, and the guy was like, oh, yeah, you guys were fine.
Yeah.
And then the cabin ended up being amazing.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Very, very nice cabin.
That was how it started. You know, no problem. It had nothing to do. Our problems had nothing to do with the eclipse.
With the eclipse.
Yeah. But then Saturday, we went into Boise. And then we saw how Boise reacted to the Unipiper. The Unipiper showed up in Boise.
Yeah.
Yep.
You went down, there's something called Freak Alley there, which is kind of an alleyway that cuts through town that
really
is
neat.
Full of really cool murals and art and stuff like that. And so it's kind of a tourist thing to walk down. And so the Unipiper rode down there and did a little show for all the people at the restaurants. And it was, Boise seemed really busy, especially we met my niece, Emily, and her boyfriend, Peter, there. And they said it was kind of crawling.
You say it seemed busy, but I mean, it still didn't seem busy to me.
No, I mean, well, not compared to, I would say, like a downtown Portland but I feel like for them, that particular street was busy.
So I will admit, when we left Portland, I said, maybe we should get all of our groceries in Portland because I wasn't convinced there was going to be food left in Boise.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I'll back that saying. Compared to what we thought was going to be like the swarm of locusts descending on someone's crops, it was not busy at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying those two restaurants were full.
Can we talk about, let's talk about my gas can for a minute.
We love your gas can.
Mark, I'll let you take this one.
How hot was it that day?
When we drove out there?
Was it particularly hot?
Well, and for
not
people who
not inside the car because we had air conditioning.
For people who aren't familiar with the terrain, once you leave kind of, once you go a couple hours down 84 going east, you go to the other side of the Cascade Mountains. On the other side of the Cascade Mountains is a desert that it's hot and flat and full of nothing and just oppressive heat and nonsense. And so Brian, thinking ahead, because we had all been hearing
being the Boy Scout of the group.
Right. And so you were thinking ahead and brought extra gas because we kept hearing, you know, all these little towns will be out of gas. And so
the day before, Prineville was on the news because Prineville was out of gas. And had like a 30-mile long line of traffic.
Wow.
So I brought gas in a 2-gallon
two-gallon jug.
Our 2 gallons of jug.
Yep.
And we made a stop. And
it was tied to the luggage rack.
It was tied to the luggage rack on top of the roof. And it had swelled so that it wasn't exactly a rectangle anymore. it was more of
hot air balloon.
A hot air balloon. And so I had been obsessed with releasing the pressure inside so that it wouldn't spring a leak and become a total Molotov cocktail kind of situation. But then I left that kind of really, I'm like, while it's driving down the road, I'll have this loose.
It had no relief valve. It was just,
And that's the thing. When we stopped the first time, that's when we noticed it because it was all bulged out and I looked for the little tab or whatever and then there wasn't. And then so we all kind of had this collective.
But do you remember the reason why we were even talking about the gas can at this point? Every other car on the interstate would look at us and with the most disdainful scowls on their face.
Were no other gas cans.
What are these people doing?
And so the only thing we could figure out, because I mean, it was kind of funny because you see the big car with this 2-gallon gas tank off kilter tied to the side. But we also figured out that you couldn't really see the cable, the little ropes that were tying it
down. Right,
it
was a very narrow string.
So it just looked like we just were driving around with a gas can on the roof.
Yeah, we set it on the roof, and we're those people leaving Portland, and we forgot that we'd set the gas can on the roof. So everyone, but instead of like trying to flag us down and point to the roof, they were just like, ah, these idiots.
Yeah, they were giving us really dirty looks.
All of them just wanted to see it fall off.
So I loosen it up just a little bit, and we go off on our way, and turns out that the wind took it the rest of the way off and we lost the lid to the gas canister altogether. But at the next gas station, I buy the gas can there that has the same size.
Turns out gas caps these days are universal.
Are pretty universal. Which really confused the lady inside because I told her I'm buying the gas can because I only need the cap. She wouldn't let me leave the rest of the gas
can behind.
Right. And she's like, no, but you're buying the whole gas can. Like, I know, but I only need the cap. I'm buying the cap for $10 and
here, you can resell the can for half off.
Right.
Exactly.
Shove some paper towels in it.
Exactly. So.
The other thing of note for the trip is that you guys had traveled before together, correct? You guys had gone on trips before. I had let you guys know when we left that this was a series of odd firsts. That
Todd's like, I don't travel well with others.
I don't know if I travel, and I didn't know because I haven't been on a vacation that was outside of like my yearly family, my family's vacation. I always drive the long distances, and I never been the passenger that long, you know. And so all of these things, so I'm like, I don't know what my mental state will be at the end of it, but I think we all traveled rather well together.
Yeah, and Nick is terribly critical of people that are fussy about traveling, by the way. So I'm surprised that we came fairly unscathed. There were some moments of tension, but
of other passion, a passionate argument. But as soon as I've never really been like, when I drive long distances, I usually just listen to a podcast or an audiobook or something like that. So the whole, you know, listening to music and all that, I texted my friend, I'm like, oh, I guess people listen to music when they drive around. And so from the get go,
that's what happens in cars with radios.
Yeah. And so from the get go, like, we weren't even outside of Portland proper, and Mark had brought road games to play. And so Mark, from the get-go, is playing, and I don't know if this audio is going to work, but you can hear him.
He's just...
Who am I?
How many times?
I am a U.S. television personality.
So out of, like, if there was 5 seconds of silence, I am an actor. And then we would all play Mark's little guessing game.
Do you have the one where he's like, I am a woman.
I am a woman.
And so, yeah, when arguments started breaking out, you would just hear Mark, I am a writer.
I was just trying to take the tension down a notch. And so I've got one for you now.
Oh, great.
Okay, so what am I? I am an electronic device.
Computer.
I was first invented in 1876.
The phonograph.
The police use me.
Walkie-talkies.
Radio.
I trap people.
I trap people.
I am an electronic device.
Electronic trapping device.
Some people have beaten me.
Oh, lie detector.
Yep.
Oh,
nice.
That's a good one.
So yeah, imagine that for 12 hours. And that was our
that was our trip.
And Sarah, Brian, your wife, who was sitting in the front passenger seat, and Nick, who was sitting in the very back driver's seat. They were the only ones playing road bingo. And so the entire trip, they're just shouting nouns at each other across the car.
Detour.
Children.
Has anybody seen a detour sign?
That was a boy.
Yeah. So yeah, but it was that. Yeah, the trip.
I think a bus.
And so I think on Sunday was the most fun day for me, besides maybe the moment of the eclipse. Mm-hmm. But we went to Idaho City.
Yeah.
Wow, yes. What a cool place. You guys had been there before, right?
We've been there before.
Tell us about Idaho City, Mark.
So the route that we took up to what is that highway, 27 or 72 or something like that, 21? I think it's 21. From Boise up into the hills, ultimately into Stanley, and then further. There's a little town called Idaho City, which was an old mining town back in the day. There's no cell reception in the area at all.
It's crazy.
Oh, and no, there was if you stood extremely close to the gas station. Yeah. You can get one bar of Verizon. So I called my dad for his birthday.
Oh, that's right. You did. Everywhere else, we couldn't. Never got it on AT&T. And it's got the coolest little shops, little antique stores, little curiosity shops. And
I think that's underselling it.
Yeah.
There was a place I looked it up because I had to know what the story was behind it.
Yeah.
But that first place we went to is called Boco Sluice Box. And it is, according to the internet, the most photographed building in the state of Idaho.
Wow.
So yeah, the lady there made that claim as well.
Oh, funny.
And she had just
bought it. If you say it enough times, it is true.
She had just bought it. She had just bought the place 2 years ago, and it had been closed for a number of years. And then before that, there was a man that ran the place, and he was kind of infamous.
For like 30 years, they ran a little antique store. But again, antique store is underselling it. I found a description that some travel writer on the internet, shamelessly steal this, but it is the perfect description of this place. It looks as though someone coated a normal two-story house in super glue, then dumped the contents of a well-stocked secondhand store on top of it, and then left it to rust and age for 20 years.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
But less structurally sound than that just made it sound.
Well, speaking of, so when you first walk into it, it's an old wood frame house, wood wall, like just cabin, you know, very close interiors. And you walk in and the cross beams on the roof had little markings on it that said 6'3", kind of like if you're going an underpass. And there are three of them in a row. The first one you hit in the door must be under 6'2" because I hit it. The second one touched just the top of my head, and the third one I could fit under with about an inch, and they all were labeled 6'3", and the lady said, oh, those markings have been here forever. So that's how much that house is just settling wherever. So I thought that was funny that I smacked my head on that first 6'3" thing.
It is totally worth just Googling it so you can see photos of this place.
And I'll probably use that picture for our image this week.
Yeah, so the Boco sluice box. And then when this lady purchased it, the original owner had just abandoned it due to ailing health with intent to reopen, and he just never came back. And so this lady bought it 10 years later and just opened the door as if.
So they had the original owners, as Nick was finding out, he is a very good conversationalist, so he was finding out all about it, and I was kind of listening to it, and so the original owners had it forever or whatever, and then the guy was told by, I believe, like his insurance company that he, for his health reasons, he couldn't work there anymore because it's always so cold in there because all of the windows are covered with all the junk that they have.
Or they wouldn't insure him?
Yeah, it was just too cold for him. And the lady that works there now says she's always running a heater. And you can't heat the place up because it's so old and so shut in. And so for about 10 years, it was closed. But his wife, the owner's wife, was the person who always did acquisitions. And she never stopped buying stuff. And for 15 years, just kept putting stuff in the house. And then, so when this new owner opened, it just opened the doors, and it was just the nonsense that it is now.
It's cool. Very cool. Idaho City, there's other good stuff there, too. We did a horse race.
We did a horse race.
That was strange.
There was a toy store and with a crazy lady that was running it. And so we're browsing the toy store. She's like, are you ready to do a horse race? And of course we said yes.
I think Nick said yes.
I thought he was talking to the kids, that were in the thing. So I didn't pay any attention to it at all until everyone was standing outside. And by everyone, I mean Nick or Mark and Brian standing there with their stick horses.
Yes. What do you call those? Hobby horses?
Hobby horses. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So she handed us all hobby horses, wooden broomstick horses. And the three of us raced down the main street of
Idaho City.
Idaho City.
As a child shot his pop gun at us.
Yeah. Hooting and hollering.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous.
It was surreal, actually, because there was only 30 people in the town.
Yeah.
And here was a quarter of the population running down the street on a hobby horse.
Being shot at by pop guns, cabins, for no reason.
We ended up doing a little soaking, though, later that day. So that was Nick's thing about Sunday.
Everything.
He just wanted a place where he could go in the water and soak. And so we found a place in town just talking to the locals. Everywhere we'd go, we'd be like, hey, do you have any recommendations where to go? And everyone kept saying, just go to the dog washing culvert.
Just go right up there to the dog washing culvert,
which is a couple blocks away.
So we headed out, and what's funny is Brian, you and I were walking and heading in the direction of the, place, and we'd kind of taken a turn too early. And so I just pulled a random person aside. I'm like, is there a swimming hole, the dog washing culvert? And just like, oh, it's right over there. And gave clear directions right around the corner as to where it was.
That's funny.
And so we got there, and there was a grandmother with her two grandsons and
sure enough,
dog.
And
dog.
Boo Radley, the dog. And they were swimming in the swimming hole, and we swam there for a few minutes, and it was too cold and whatever for the whole gang.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, there's a little tiny pond type thing on one side of this dirt road that kind of headed into the mountains. And then they had one of the giant aluminum pipes that went under the road. And that led on the other side of the road to the little river that was feeding the little dammed up portion. And so it was kind of neat to go. I walked through, you guys floated through.
Yeah, you could walk, swim, or just crawl through the culvert, all the way through.
And that was,
which you would never do in Portland.
Yeah, and that was really cool.
It was.
The swimming hole.
And then because it was a day that ended in Y, we found somewhere to have some ice cream.
There's lots of ice cream on this trip. I was very excited.
Yeah.
It was good.
Thinking back on it, though, I had a Bernstein Bears moment with, because you were right, Mark. I thought it was always sarsaparilla.
Exactly. So we stopped at this place that had sarsaparilla on tap.
Yeah.
And I started to pronounce the word as I read it as so they had a sign over the ice cream stand. And it said sarsaparilla, S-A-R, sarsaparilla. And
sarsaparilla.
And so I started asking her for, I'm like, do you have any of the sarsaparilla? And she looked at me strangely, like I had said something really odd. And so now I was totally caught in a weird spot. Like, you know, do you have sarsaparilla? sarsaparilla.
Chuck Palahniuk?
Chuck Palahniuk, anyone? And so she, I don't know what was up with her. She worked there. She didn't have as much information as I did about sarsaparilla. You know, like, she's like, do you mean a bottle or from the tap? I'm like,
The fundamental existence of.
There's a sign right above your head that says you have it on tap.
Right.
That's what I want.
So
not
let's
a
see
bottle
here
of it.
Let's see if here, if this.
Sarsaparilla.
Oh, my word.
That's really weird.
Sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla.
Wow. And I couldn't figure out the difference between that and root beer.
Yeah, sarsaparilla.
Yeah, sarsaparilla. Who knew?
So that's a thing. And I had a sarsaparilla float, and it was wonderful.
And you, this was the trip of malted things for you, which
malt.
I was, I mean, I guess I fundamentally, I guess I knew that you did like that, but I mean, like everywhere we went was a malted this and a malted.
Well, everybody was doing ice cream, and I've been doing, we've been doing Weight Watchers for a few months, and I threw
vacation
it,
calories don't count.
Threw it out for the vacation.
Right.
So. I gained about 5 pounds over the 5 days.
oh, by the way, I didn't realize until last night. I'm like, didn't I have a bag of Oreos around here somewhere?
No, I ate those.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
anything that was
there
left
were
was
some
eaten.
Crumbs. There were some crumbs that were left over as of yesterday. Those are gone. Those are the mini golden,
the mini gold ones.
Oreos in the bag.
Yeah,
that was resealable.
So good.
And those were the snacks on the way out of Idaho to the Eclipse.
Okay.
just so you're wondering.
So Mark got malts, and
yeah,
every chance
malt.
I got phosphate, which is so interesting. I didn't kind of ever realize that was a thing, but we stopped at two soda fountains, which is weird because you don't typically see old-fashioned soda fountains, but mm-hmm. we came across two, and they both advertise phosphate sodas, and they had a it's basically just a soda with a typical grape, lime, whatever flavor soda you want, and then they put acid phosphate, which sounds really not appetizing,
right?
But they put that in there, and it makes it tangy.
It wasn't a pill like Alka-Seltzer. It was
no
injection of some sort of gas.
Yeah, it wasn't even gas. It comes in what looks like a medicine bottle with a little eyedropper, and they just like drop a few drops of acid phosphate in there. And then so I looked online, looked on Amazon to see if you could just buy it to have some, and it's hard to find. You can get it, but there's only like two places where you can get it.
Huh.
I was gonna try and like Amazon Prime Now some of that stuff,
right.
And so we could like taste it.
Yeah.
I wonder what it tastes like by itself. But it has a pH phosphate. Of 2, and so
wow.
Some paint
crazy.
Off.
Yeah. So I predict that's gonna be the next drink trend. You'll see those make a comeback.
I love it.
I'm calling
it. It'll be the salt and straw of beverage places. It'll be.
Yeah. You'll get everything, but with phosphate.
With phosphate.
Oh,
with sarsaparilla.
Don't you use those machines, Todd, where you the new drink
the touch
machines?
Ones? Yeah.
It's going to be a new option.
That would be awesome.
Phosphate. Plus phosphates.
Yeah, and then we went to the eclipse. And
then we went to the eclipse, the end. So we all get up. So we had all decided. So, yeah, we were about an hour north of Boise, and where we were going was about an hour east, northeast of Boise for the most part.
Yep.
Had kind of a tiny town in mind called Durkee, where it was just it looked like a couple of open fields that were off the side of the freeway. Because again, Eastern Oregon, there is nothing.
So let's be honest, we had no plan to see the eclipse when we left. Like, I mean, our plan was to see the eclipse,
right.
But we did not know where or
we didn't have
how.
A definitive plan. We had,
and that was
generalities.
New for me too.
But something like this, looking back, there's no way you could have really planned to.
We agree. We agree. So, the path of totality.
We knew we wanted to be in the path.
Yeah,
we wanted to be in the path of totality.
And our cabin was almost in it,
like 20 miles.
Yeah, right. It was about 20 miles away. So we knew we weren't there for that.
Right.
And we would have to go the wrong direction to get into the path of totality near our cabin.
Oh, okay.
Or we'd take the big loop around Boise and up 84.
But it would just added a ton of time to our trip back, which we were dreading.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we knew that the path of totality, the center of the path crosses Highway 84 at an exit called Lime. And we did some researching around Lime. Lime has a cement factory that's been closed and shuttered for 20 years.
Which is a beautiful, just old, decrepit.
It looks amazing.
Would be incredible.
It's an amazing building.
So we stopped there on the way into Idaho and realized that they have done everything to prevent anybody from approaching that area. So they blocked everything off. They've posted warnings and with fines from $1,000 to $5,000 if you are caught trespassing in this area. We're like, crap.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, and you had to spend a night in jail and you would show up in court the next day.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so none of us wanted that. and so we...
It kind of reminded me, this whole experience, kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, we stopped at Line and the bed was too hard. And then we went to Huntington and the bed was too soft.
So Huntington was a little bit up the road and they had a plan that we didn't have. So they had, you could buy parking and they had a little festival going. And that day they had like a weed festival going and Huntington was like a weed town. And
that's what they're on the very border of Idaho. So all the people from Idaho come over. So this tiny town, which I mean, literally has one pump gas station, not like one pump. So there's like nine people that live in this and they have two giant weed dispensaries.
Probably the only Oregon border town that has not outlawed sales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so everyone comes over from Idaho and they're like, oh yeah, Huntington. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it was a weed town and they were preparing for a festival, but they're kind of a little bit off of the freeway. And the people that we were talking to said that literally a armada of RVs were en route to Huntington. 147 RVs had left their place in Wyoming and were en route to Huntington.
And that happened. They learned that while we were in town. So we witnessed the meltdown of this town and people just realizing that they could not stop this and they didn't know what was going to happen. It was amazing to kind of watch this and be there, because when we arrived in town, we were chatting and they were like, oh yeah, call the Chamber of Commerce. So they're selling spots. Yeah, it's going to be a good old time. And then by the time we left,
they were in panic. And they're like, you can't just come on Monday. It will be full. You know, the whole town, it might not be here. They had no idea what to expect. And they clearly were like, do not come on Monday.
I wonder whatever happened there.
It's probably still mayhem.
We called the Chamber of Commerce and the lady like laughed at us.
She did. She did. She I think she was at the pot smoking festival at that time when she
was going on.
Like, what day you coming? Oh, Monday. yeah. Good luck with that.
And so we decided to skip Huntington.
Yeah.
And we were going to the next town on the, so, as the sequence of events goes, it goes Huntington, Lyme, Durkee. And so our next plan was, well, let's just go to Durkee. It's a little bit off of the path of totality, but like 5 miles, and we're still good. It's still got almost 2 minutes of totality, and it meets all of our criteria. Much bigger zones of space, lots of parking and whatever. And so we were headed towards Durkee. Well, it turns out that between Lyme and Durkee is a little rest area.
Mm-hmm.
Called the Weatherby.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Weatherby rest area.
Yeah.
And we stopped there. We're like, well, this will have a bathroom.
Yeah.
We're there at 3:30 in the morning at this point.
Yeah.
We didn't really put it on our list of potential. We're headed towards Durkee. And so we stopped there. And what was the experience as we were driving into it?
There, we pulled off the freeway, and as we rounded the corner to like turn into the rest stop, you just saw a sea of cars that were, I mean, several hundred that were already there at 3:30 in the morning.
Yes. It was full. It was packed.
Beyond capacity.
Yeah, it was beyond capacity, and it was just teeming with people that had been there for a long time as well. There were people that had been camping for 2 days.
Now, this is weird.
At the rest area.
You know, like you said, this is 3:30 in the morning on Monday, and we had left for the eclipse on Friday, and this was the first sign of, like, gridlock traffic that we had seen.
We had seen a group of maybe 50 RVs pulled off, maybe on the way there in one of those little tiny, but still.
Yeah. There's a town called Weezer that was going to be having a festival they've got an RV park right outside of Weezer. And so we saw a lot of activity at Weezer.
Okay.
And when we were in Idaho City, there were parking lots set up for Idaho City, because Idaho City did have totality, but it was like 25 seconds of totality. You know?
Okay.
Come on, not very much. And so we didn't want to do Idaho City, but we hadn't seen the throngs that were promised
until we pulled into
this rest area. And we're like, okay, so we have, it is two in the hand is worth one in the bush.
Yeah.
That was
literally what Brian said.
We pulled up onto a curb spot that was
fine to park with. We squeezed into a spot that technically wasn't illegal.
Right.
There were plenty of people parking.
Wasn't a spot either.
Wasn't a spot. But it didn't have a no parking sign, which other areas did have.
Yeah. There were people parked on the medians and
the curb,
the grass,
and the grass.
The pet rest area.
Yeah. And I mean, there were hundreds of cars and people just walking around like zombies. And
in the darkness at a rest stop at 3:30 in the morning.
And one jackass who was talking really loud. So we pulled in next behind this guy talking to these two bros.
Who was totally Mark in 30 years.
Yeah, so this guy
is absolutely me in
maybe
30 years.
Early mid-60s, maybe, this guy.
And he was
got his
army veteran.
Cap on, yeah.
He's an army veteran, and it's 3:30 in the morning, and he is telling these two guys how the universe works.
he's telling them everything.
He has led his entire life up for this moment.
And he was, I mean, he was dressed sharp. He was coffee in hand, and he was just raring to go.
Pumped. And so he was talking about.
And he was standing right. So the car in front of us had these old, what we called the bros, which were turned out to be 40-year-old. Dude bro type.
Yeah, who had driven from Seattle.
With a skeleton on top of their car.
With a light up skeleton on their car, kind of on a whim to just, and this is where they ended up. And it was just the whole rest area was just a weird conglomeration of people. And it's like everybody's lives convened on this one moment. And these are the people you're left with.
And the only thing, and Mark, you thought this too, the only thing that I really could compare it to is when I was a kid, we drove out to, what is it, Death Valley or
Edwards Air Force Base,
which is in the middle of the desert in California to watch the space shuttle land. So it's all these people with RVs and cars or whatever showing up in the middle of the desert and staring at the sky for like 4 hours and then going home.
Yep.
And it was that same thing, just a strange, interesting group of people all there to experience this.
We're
going to
see this momentary phenomena for less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's almost and exactly all, the same scenario.
Yeah. And we're all strangers, but we're in it together. Like, and throughout the whole morning when we were there, I mean, there's a point where the line to these poor bathrooms at this podunk rest stop was over a half hour long.
Yeah.
But like there was the vibe of the place was cool. And it was like, we were all in this together. We're all tired and sick of it. And, but we're all going to be cool and we're all going to,
it did not make you hate humanity. Like you would think something expect. Like this could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, shout out to the Weatherby, rest area workers.
Totally. I actually tweeted them as the Unipiper. Oh, nice. And I thanked them and the Oregon Department of Transportation responded and said they would pass along the message.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, because cool. They were just nonstop. I mean, those bathrooms were in constant use by several hundred people for days. And even the day of the eclipse when it was so busy, there was always toilet paper. They were all clean.
Yeah.
They were all, the place was picked up. It was incredible.
It was well done.
Yeah. So they had planned ahead. So good job on them.
But the, going back to the Mark in 30 years, I think once every half hour, he repositioned his car.
Yeah. For some strange reason. He
was parked across from us.
He wasn't changing parking spots. He was just slightly
like getting comfortable in a big chair, sort of.
Right. Yeah. You just kind of easing into it.
There was an odd amount of cars kind of leaving an hour before the eclipse, you know, and who knows where they were going to go.
Yeah. Durkee.
But Durkee probably. But when somebody else would leave, he would reposition his car and he wasn't gaining any ground. Even he was just moving. He was parked in a spot that said no parking.
Yeah.
And so maybe he thought that by moving it, he wasn't parked.
Technically. Avoid
2 hour limit. I'll just move up a space.
But yeah. And after we got to the rest stop and we kind of all went to the bathroom, like I say, it's now for like 4 a.m. And so we were all trying to at least get a little bit of sleep because we all woke up at 2 and that guy was just talking nonstop and so loud, like at the hood of our car. And it was just, ugh.
Mark, you engaged him. What did you learn?
He was trying to surmise where the sun was going to be. He was telling that, I'm pretty sure it's going to be over here and all that.
That was funny because everyone else there followed his lead.
Right. And so, of course, I had my augmented reality app that showed specific locations of the sun at a given time and date. So I had plugged in that date and that time and then I was able to put the iPhone above and I showed it to him and
much like Pokemon Go,
right? And exactly like Pokemon Go. And I'm like, it's gonna be right there. And he's like, wow, you really have, like, he was so one-upped,
right?
And then I just simply walked away without
it was like a proverbial mic drop.
He was like honey. Like he just wanted to stick to, he kept on talking. I just walked away.
Sluiced out and back into the car.
It was kind of like that moment where you step into an elevator and then you just turn and face everybody in the elevator. Exactly. That was Mark in his chair. Everyone's like facing off to the west and then Mark is like 90 degrees from everyone else looking and then eventually everyone else caught on and then Mark was
rotated.
Able to sway the popular opinion.
And so the sun came right where we had projected it went.
Well done, Mark.
And the one thing that I didn't predict correctly would have been it was near a street light. And like, that won't be a problem because it'll be daylight.
Right.
Well, it turns out that when an eclipse happens, it gets dark and street lights turn on, which ended up being not for the best when we're trying to take pictures of the eclipse, which is stupid. Because, come on. Just experience it
right.
And watch everybody else's pictures who have real cameras. And
I did none of those things. I took several terrible pictures on my cell phone.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. There's one that accidentally turned out okay.
And so I want once. Well, let's just talk about the eclipse experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
So about, I would say
you also had the app that had countdowns.
I had countdowns.
So it was like that. It was that movie from the future thing where the AI is narrating thing. 1 minute to eclipse start.
Exactly.
1 minute to point of no return.
So if you haven't listened to the Mark and Todd Guest episode about eclipses, when you should. There's
did we do one?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did. Like I'll have to look 6 back. Months ago okay. when we were planning
oh,
this
my.
Whole thing.
Well, no wonder I don't remember.
It's been forever. There's really four moments that are important during an eclipse. There's initial contact, second contact, third contact, and fourth contact. The initial contact is when the moon first covers an edge of the sun, and then the start of totality is spot two, the end of totality is spot three, and then four is when the moon goes out of the sun's circle altogether. And so the app gave countdown times to all of that and had all my augmented reality things, and we leveraged technology to get the most out of it.
And actually, surprisingly, at that rest stop in the middle of nowhere, we were all able to get cell service.
It was a really good service
with our wireless. So our wireless worked really great.
Actually, I don't know if Mark and Nick did.
We did not.
Oh.
Yeah, but
I had 5 bars.
It made the time go a lot faster.
It really did.
And so I just tethered onto your phone and used your bandwidth, which was fine.
Don't tell
my,
Sprint. If
all
you're
of my 1 gig of bandwidth.
And so I would say about 20 minutes before totality, we really started noticing the physical effects maybe a half an hour before.
Yeah.
And so the sky, the light in the area got less contrasty and weird and darker.
Darker,
but
not darker.
Right.
Darker.
Because the sun was, when we're used to seeing it at that brightness, it's on the horizon and filtered through the yellows and the orange hues of the atmosphere. This one was getting that straight daylight blue filter, but with
less
light.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Todd wouldn't understand this, but it was like putting on progressively darker shades of sunglasses.
I admitted on the way there that one of my most ridiculous
stereotypes
is that I've always hated people who wear sunglasses because I just think they're wusses. And so, yeah, they were all saying, they're like, yeah, it's like wearing sunglasses. And like, I wear glasses anyway, so I don't really wear sunglasses. It was a whole new world to me. The world of blue blockers.
So then the air started getting colder.
Mm-hmm.
The and then my app said, observe for shadow bands.
Yes.
What the hell are shadow bands?
Shadow bands, I saw, I don't remember seeing them where they were because I don't know that I was looking for them. Shadow bands, you know, when you're looking at light through heat and you can see
yep.
the waves, they more or less look like that on the ground,
yep.
little squiggly lines,
oh,
probably
exactly.
from.
Huh.
I didn't know where to look to see.
Yeah, and they're pretty rare even for during the eclipse.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So it happened just a couple minutes before the totality and a couple minutes after. There's a lot of debate about the specifics of the cause, and there's a lot of different theories out there and such. But the best way to observe them is to take a white sheet of paper and put it on the ground. And people describe it both as like looking at the heat waves kind of stuff or looking at light at the bottom of a pool.
Yeah, is, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
you've
pretty
got
accurate too.
The bright and dimmer areas and they're kind of wavy like that.
Yeah. I did see though, because I had seen it posted a couple of weeks before, the effect of the eclipse going through the leaves of the trees,
yes.
leaving all of those little camera obscura type pictures of the eclipse, which is pretty neat. I'm glad I'd seen that before, also I don't think I would have
right.
really registered
really cool.
that it
we
was
thought
different.
We were being all trendy and you know, ahead of the curve by posting photos of those, and then it turned out this was like the most
literally
common photo that
everyone,
everybody
yeah.
my family in Virginia was posting those photos.
Well, because I think because A, you can capture it with a camera and it happens no matter if you're close to the totality or not.
Right, right.
I think so. But yeah, it was funny to see how many people were able to see those.
So the shadow of the moon casts across the Earth, and it travels, and the estimates range from like 1500 to 2500 miles per hour. And as we were getting ready for all of that experience, I wasn't able to like put all of that into my head of what is moving exactly,
right,
to cause that shadow
between the Earth, the moon, and the sun.
Right. So if we step back and do just a little thought experiment, I'm going to pull up a little eclipse video of, let's see if I can get this over
there.
It's
like a fetus.
Yeah. Okay. And so if we play a video of the eclipse shadow, this is prepared by NASA. And so this is the experience of the eclipse as seen from outer space, basically. Mm-hmm. And so the shadow starts on the left-hand side and then swaths across the United States to the right-hand side. And the lag that you're seeing is because of the Apple TV lag. And so it went across the entire country down to Charleston and then off into the sea. So here we're seeing the shadow go from left to right. But if you think about our planet, we are, if that shadow was just a spot that was stationary,
mm-hmm,
and the Earth was rotating under it,
mm-hmm,
it would rotate the other way. And so the sun rises in the east and sets in the west.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it rises in the east, in our picture, the Earth is spinning from left to right.
Okay.
And the shadow would have gone from east to west.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that isn't the major cause, obviously. It is the speed of the moon going around the rotation, you know, is orbiting the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that moon is coming between the sun and the Earth. And the Earth's rotation is actually slowing down the shadow. So if the Earth wasn't spinning, it would have been like 3,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
But because the Earth is spinning at in ultimately the same direction that the shadow was traveling, it helped to slow down our effective experience of the shadow hitting us. So instead of 3,000 miles an hour, it's like 1,500 miles an hour.
That's neat.
And so when the shadow is near the edge of the Earth versus in the middle of the Earth, it's also faster. So when it went across Oregon, it was faster than when it went across Tennessee by almost 1,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
Because if you picture a globe, you picture a globe and you've got a flashlight and you are moving that flashlight steady, the amount of edge that flashlight is able to cover is a longer distance for the same movement of the flashlight because it's at an angle.
Yeah. Right.
And so that effective speed of that flashlight across that surface of the globe on the edge is a lot faster than it would be towards the bulge in the middle.
Hmm. Okay.
So what was the maximum amount of totality that we had in the United States? Do you know that?
That would be in Tennessee. And it was, I think, closer to 2 minutes and 30 seconds, but I didn't look that number up, but I know that we received 2 minutes and 9 seconds, and I don't think anybody received 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And so I think it was like 2:30.
Cool.
So totality came.
Yeah. So up until that point, it was neat. You know, we've seen solar or lunar eclipses before and very similar to that. And so we're looking all through the glasses and stuff like that. And at that, there is that 1 second where it's like, cool, 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 cool.
Yeah, this is, yeah.
And then it all covers
we
up.
We see stars. We're seeing stars come out. I see a planet come out. Yeah.
You still
but
can't.
Still.
And you still can't look directly at it, obviously, because there's just still too much brightness.
So that was when I thought that you'd be able to look at it sooner, even when it was like 99%. Oh, we can look now. But no, it's like any sun, you can't look
at it. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
And then it went out. And since all of us, I think, were looking through our glasses, like, what surprised me is that I couldn't see, like, in the totality, you can't see anything through the glasses, obviously, because it's not bright enough. And that kind of surprised me because I thought that you would be able to see the corona that way. And I mean, I'd seen pictures of the totality and when you see that the glow, the white glow around it. But in my head, I still wasn't sure, like, maybe that's special lenses or like that's the camera that NASA uses to take pictures of the sun or whatever. But as soon as that totality hit and we took off our glasses, it was just astonishing.
Yeah. Everyone together was like,
it's a collective gasp.
And I was waiting for someone to have like a smart aleck comment or somebody just like yell out something witty. And it didn't happen because everyone just like,
I mean, literally everyone was just awestruck,
speechless
because And for, I mean, obviously I'm talking to people a week after this happened who've already had their memories, but I mean, it was just,
unless you've seen it before, you can't describe it or be prepared for what the totality, the difference between 99.9% and full totality is not
because you didn't get, you didn't get any of that white glow without the totality. And for, I mean, two minutes and 9 seconds is a long time. I mean, when you just sit and stare at a wall for that long, it
still
seems forever.
Felt like 10 seconds to me.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool. Cause the vibe, you know, it got, everything got dark and the streetlights came on and then everyone was just awestruck and kind of giggling and kind of like,
and the glow of the corona almost looked like the Northern Lights. It was all kind of wavy.
Yeah. That's a very good way to describe them.
Yeah.
And just, so big and vibrant. That's what I wasn't expecting, I don't think.
No, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't have any expectations for the entire trip, the experience and the eclipse. And I was pleasantly surprised by both.
Yeah, and I think I told everyone on Sunday that, because like, as we were all trying to figure out all the different plans of where to go and what to do and what was going to happen and traffic nightmares and all this stuff, and I was just like, there was a point where I was like, this, everything is so ridiculous right now that I'm just going to go along with it and be fine with whatever. And everything turned out amazingly. And so, seeing our spot to see the eclipse was perfect. And it was a cool environment. Oh,
there's nothing more American than watching the eclipse from a rest area on the interstate.
Yes. So,
it was. That picture does a pretty good job of kind of what I was trying to say with the Northern Lights.
I couldn't see, and I don't know if you could see them with your naked eye, the actual corona explosions of
prominences.
The prominences.
So I used the binoculars.
Okay.
The non-solar binoculars.
Oh, okay. I think at one point, because everyone was so awestruck, I think you came up to me and shoved them in my hand.
I said, look at it through these now. Because we had 2 minutes and I wasn't going to.
There's no time.
There's no time. And because it was such, it was so beautiful.
Yeah,
it was.
It really was at the end of like Raiders of the Lost.
Don't look, Marion.
It's so beautiful.
Agreed.
So that the totality happened. The 2 minutes and 9 seconds happened. We had got the nice countdown from the app of 10 seconds to totality, which is very at the end of Aliens.
Yes, that's totally what I was thinking.
And as soon as, and we had talked about it before, as soon as that totality was over, we started packing up our stuff, getting everything thrown in the car because we had to get, everyone was stuck like 200-300 cars in a rest stop with one tiny
little exit.
After Nick pops the bottle on a bottle of champagne and he's like, hey guys, let's party. and then we had to figure out how to quickly dispose of an entire bottle of champagne.
Which, judging by the smell,
drinking and driving,
just must have tasted awful because it smelled like grape gasoline of some sort.
It was Eclipse champagne or something. It was dark black champagne.
Yeah, it was black champagne.
Yeah, and we had our shirts, which you guys are wearing now. Mine was a little small. But
I should probably put my glasses
we
on,
had,
too.
Yes, and the nice plastic glasses that I kept losing because I can only keep track of one pair of glasses at a time. But we packed up, threw everything in the car, and we were on the freeway in 3 minutes. just out, just right out, right ahead of the crowd, and open freeway for the most part.
And there was a traffic jam that came up at a construction area up the road about 5-10 miles.
Yeah.
And we happened to take the little frontage road around it, and that saved us an hour and a half.
Really, we looked just like barely missed it too, because we looked at the traffic.
That was Google all the way saving us there. It's like a faster route is available.
Yeah, and so
you
we
exit
kinda,
now.
We did. We screeched off the freeway, but other than that, I would say we hit negligible traffic, except for when we stopped in Biggs.
Yeah, I mean,
it was your favorite part of the trip, I think, right, Brian?
Yeah, I was not happy. That was my worst moment.
We stopped in Biggs, which is a
rest stop for the most part.
It's a little town that's got a couple little restaurants and a couple gas stations.
Truck stops is what I meant to say.
And it's basically where the road comes in from Madras,
from eastern Oregon. Yeah, there's a highway that goes up the middle of Oregon that goes into eastern Washington, Highway 97, and that meets up with I-84 at Biggs.
And that exit was friggin' chaos.
It was
absolute mayhem. Everybody on the planet was there trying to get out of there.
And that's where we saw the huge line of just unmoving cars snaking into both directions, up
all
into Washington and down back into Oregon.
Yeah, it just sounds like central Oregon got it a lot worse than just eastern Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I shared with you guys the video of the airplanes at Madras Airport.
Yes, just lined
just
up.
Airplanes for days.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Did a quick bathroom stop at in a Biggs, and then got back on the freeway and really had no traffic all the way back.
Again, I would say less traffic than usual on 84.
It was amazing.
Bizarre.
And the only place, so we came back to Mark's house here in northeast or southeast, I don't know, you're right
on
the
northeast
freeway. You know, unpacked our stuff, and then I drove all the way back home down I-5 to Wilsonville with nothing. It was very heavy traffic coming up I-5, but it was all moving at a fairly brisk, you know, maybe 40-50 mile per hour pace. But as soon as I got to my little stupid podunk exit, it was packed in both directions. I don't really even know where the one direction goes, because as far as I know, it just goes to nothingness, and I never go that way. But it's where Highway 99 meets I-5, and on the other side is another quote-unquote back way from Salem, and so they were all converging there, and all the way down the street to my house, which again is pretty much nowhere that people ever drive, cars just lined up, and I went back to the store at like 10 o'clock that night to check it out, and there was people just still streaming down the freeway.
You should have opened a lemonade stand.
I should have sold my notebooks on the corner. But one thing we did pass both ways, and I noticed it when I drove out to Idaho earlier this summer, is the Umatilla Chemical Depot. And Umatilla is not really a town. It's just an area in the middle of the desert in eastern Oregon that I didn't really know anything about. But when you pass, you look and it's... You kind of see a couple buildings, but for the most part, it's looking like you'd be looking over to a wheat field, except you see hundreds and actually 1,001 of these, what they call igloos. And they're cement storage units that were maybe, you know, a story high. And then they have walls that are at a 45 degree angle. So it's not quite a curved roof, and they're just dotted all over the place, and they have grass grown over the roofs. And I've always wondered what those were. So the chemical depot started in 1941 as we were preparing for World War I, and we needed somewhere towards the Pacific side that we can store ammunition.
Acid phosphate.
And, yeah. That's where all the phosphate is from. So like blankets and weapons and all that stuff. And then we started, so in 1962, it had 12% of our nation's stockpile of chemical weapons. And we stored NERT. My internet is kind of a hinky right now. My browser is, but there included sarin, VX nerve gas, which is kills you on skin contact.
Damn.
All sorts of weapons. 7.4 million pounds of Cold War era chemicals, which is 11% of the nation's stockpile. All piled out there in the desert in all of these individual things. And I think I said it on the way there, since all the buildings are shaped that way and have grass growing over them, you can't see them from the air because they don't leave shadows and they just look like the rest of the field. So from the air, and that's why they're all designed, so there's 1,000 of those container or those little igloos that are made of concrete out there. There's another chemical depot that was completed in 2001, which is a lot more recent. But then since then, they've started to dismantle it. And actually, it is now completely empty.
Oh, wow.
And it is no longer functioning. The complete disposal was in 2011. And so they're trying to figure out, because the area still needs to be cleaned up. It still needs to be. So there's like still $2.7 billion worth of cleanup stuff. And there's all of these bunkers, basically bunkers out there. That's good dry storage. So they're trying to figure out what can we do out there. So I think they're working with maybe the Red Cross to put emergency supplies and stuff like that. But as of now, it's finally not a place that chemical weapons are stored.
Wow.
So
is there another place they do store them now?
I don't know. They acted like they just incinerated them all, but I doubt it. I mean, I imagine that there are still some out there.
Shoot because, them into space.
Yeah. So between that and Hanford, I think there's a lot of stuff that we're never going to know until a future generation just unearths it. But really interesting to see all of those buildings just out in the middle of nowhere. And for the longest time, the poor residents of this town were like targets for every war ever, because all you got to do is bomb it and release all the nerve gas in the world. And an interesting little town. But now there's all going to be all the, like, the server farms and stuff like that are all buying land out in Eastern Oregon. So it could be that something happens with them there. You can see a little bit of the close-up of those igloo type things.
There's
too.
Probably some data on Facebook stored in there that will also melt your skin at contact.
Totally. So yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing that's out in the middle of nowhere too. There's all sorts of weird government stuff that goes on in all that unclaimed and unwatched land out in the middle of nowhere, and in Idaho too, I'm sure.
They put an addictive chemical into it, makes you crave for it nightly.
That's where the Pentaveret is located. Anyway, well, any other thoughts on our fantastic trip?
I'm glad we did it.
Yeah.
And I thank Mark for taking the lead on making us do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I it was phenomenal. I feel like I'm an eclipse chaser. Like I feel like I want to go to South America in 2019 and beyond. And
you have all this knowledge and you need to put it to use.
And I think to me, the neatest thing was, I mean, we obviously live in a very beautiful section of the planet in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, we're used to seeing like beauty that is breathtaking like every day. But to going back to what you said about, you know, jokey comments or whatever, the fact that like America kind of came together and was just so blown away by the nature around us and the cosmos and the creation and all that stuff was just super cool to see everyone
really was.
Legitimately, like in this time and age, being just agog at the world and all of that stuff. And it was a very primal feeling during that.
I feel like it's the same thing as like maybe the bicentennial or the eruption of Mount St. Helens or September 11th. Or just something that collectively we all experienced.
Yeah, which was really, really, really neat.
Yeah.
So that was, definitely an awesome trip. And I'm super glad that no one killed me.
for gas
with the gas tank on top of the car. But I'll take us out. I recorded a few things. Well, for I recorded a lot of
who am I.
But also, and it was kind of during a sleepy section of the way out there, and Brian, you had made some great music lists of eclipse and sun related songs. And I just remember driving through the wilderness of Eastern Oregon, and you were playing some song I'd never heard of that sounded like it was from a long time ago. So I thought something that had Sunnyside in it. So I figured I would take us out with that. Thanks everyone for indulging us on our trip down memory lane. But if you want to listen to a different episode,
we should submit this episode to StoryCorps.
Exactly.
You can find us at markandtalkcast.com and find out all of our old episodes. And as Brian is here, we also do Portland at the Movies together, which is a look at all of the movies made around our fair city, both good and bad, mostly so far bad. I did watch Halloween Town 2 last night, by the way.
We're breaking our own rule for the next episode.
We are. We
need it for closure.
Our next episode is going to be kind of the 1-year anniversary of the show, and which our first show was Halloween Town, which was filmed in St. Helens. And so we're taking a look at the our most sequelized movie that will ever, well, Free Willy has like 9 sequels too, though, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're taking a look at all the canon of Halloween Town. So
was there ever a cartoon of Halloween Town?
Oh,
I don't think so.
Should be.
It's due for a reboot.
There was the cartoon of Free Willy.
Yeah. So anyway, check that out, portlandatthemovies.com. There's a fantastic map at portlandatthemovies.com/map with all of the locations we've done so far, with really interesting screen grabs of what those places used to look like. So we will see you next time. Thank you for listening. Oh, yeah. It will happen.